why I shifted away from physical solutions, processes to the softer side, because I see a huge need there to convene and enable people to work through different views and opinions and the things that divide us in a sense. We are co-creators, and we some of us, sometimes we just don't realize how powerful we can be and how wonderful it feels to be part of a generative, positive, transformation. Opens up is so much hope, and also just unblocks human potential and joy.
Hello and welcome to The Empathizer, the podcast for more mutual understanding in our society. My name is Sebastian Kremser and I listen to my guests to understand what moves them. Today I'm listening to Melissa. She talks about her development as a changemaker in corporations and the tension between different stakeholders, especially when it comes to sustainable solutions and regenerative business models. She describes her personal transformation, which occurred when her perspective shifted from a physical and process-centered view to a softer, people-centered view. An exciting empathy session about more humanity in corporations. And now, have fun listening. Hello, Melissa. Welcome to the podcast, Empathizer. And as usual, I would like to ask you at the beginning, what is your topic? What is your issue? What is your purpose or meaning, which is very important for you and you would like to be heard with?
Oh, that's a good one. Just a good, simple question that I didn't know was your first question. So I think something that's on my mind that might be worthy of exploring together would be a schism, I think, that I see happening in the community of sustainability leaders, people who are committed to climate change, climate activation, making progress on the SDGs. Because what I'm noticing is that camps are forming, and there's now, I mean, we're both PQ coaches, so we know all about judgment. And so there's judgment happening. And here we are in a way in the same, like, I think from a purpose perspective or a heart perspective, wanting to make a difference in the world on big, big challenging issues like climate change and the sustainable development goals. And there's a group that's forming that is basically saying incremental is not good enough. We need radical, radical change because the sky is falling, which I tend to agree that we are facing really dire consequences if we don't move quickly. And then the other side who are, of course, this is generalization. So there are people that are sort of in between, but who are doing work either as consultants or inside of organizations, and they've become change makers inside of the systems that maybe the other group wants to deconstruct or drive radical change in, like corporations, for example, large corporations. So these two groups are, I feel like there's a bit of villainizing going on, vilification. And I struggle with this because both, I think the underlying intention of both groups is good. And I also know, I feel strongly as a change leader myself, as somebody that's been in the unofficial business of transformative change for most of my career, that we all start somewhere. And if that beginning is figuring out how we can make a small difference in our current role, so be it. And then we grow in our capacity to lead change over time.
So what I get from you is that your topic is actually the environmental change, climate change, and your concerns about the consequences we will get from our behavior in how we behave towards the environmental, the climate. And
Yeah.
then you see two kinds of how we can handle change. One is a way of incremental change, and on the other hand, there is a radical change. And you see these two groups who are, judging the situation in the economy, for example. And on the one hand, you see the incremental process of change and also the need for radical change.
Yeah.
And then there's this kind of, our own development and how we can, contribute to create change.
Right. Yeah, this is the topic that I've been thinking quite deeply about. Yeah, I've been thinking a lot about this lately, and it's one of the things that we use as a tool in positive intelligence is that visual, that story of the elephant with the blind people standing around and one of them touching the leg and declaring that, oh, this is a tree trunk, and one's touching the trunk and saying, oh, this is a hose. And what the and the and you can Google, blind men with the elephant and see it online, or blind people. And so everybody's seeing this massive, some people call it, polychrisis from different angles of the elephant, with our own personal blinders on, our own frame of reference from our lived experience and our learned experience. And we never can see the whole elephant. We can only see our 10 or 15% of it. So having respect for the many different perspectives is like I have a lot of empathy, I guess, for those who are acting from a place of both maybe some fear but personal responsibility that, hey, we need to do more, this radical, we need to take more radical approaches and stop the greenwashing and the performative, kinds of climate activism that's not going to get us where we need to go. Still going to put us over the cliff. I have empathy for that point of view and respect for that point of view. And what I want for those people, I guess, is for them to have the capacity to also have empathy for the group of people who are standing and maybe holding on to a different part of the elephant, sitting inside of a different set of constraints.
So what you see is this, there are several stakeholders, let's say this, who are looking at the elephant in the room
Yeah.
and seeing the elephant from different perspectives and different backgrounds, where they come from and perceptions. And and your need or request is to have that the people have empathy for each other, and also are able to see each other's perspective, or to see or respect it, or maybe just can sense it, or acknowledge it, that there are different perspectives
Yeah.
in all directions. I mean, right?
Yeah, and many more. Of course, there's many other perspectives that are not that I'm not articulating. I'm mostly articulating just the two perspectives of people who are basically on board and trying to do something around climate change or yeah. But there are many, right? There are many people who are sitting on the side saying, "Yeah, I see it, but I can't change it." And that's not my work. My work is somewhere else doing something else. So there's so many different ways to so many different perspectives, and underlying that, it's quite interesting to under you know to if we can open our hearts to the person with the point of view on the topic, it would make such a huge difference. And I pick sort of this polycrisis, but it is wrapped up also up into our politics today. And across the US where I sit. Oh gosh, it's just everywhere, isn't it?
So I'm sensing the concern you seem to have from my perspective. I have heard that this topic about climate change or sustainable change is an issue which is important for you all over your career or life. It was important. And now, just before I started to reflect what I've heard, you mentioned also this crisis in politics, how people behave there. And so I sense somehow the concern about how people behave to each other.
We're human judges, right?
Yeah, how they judge each other, yeah.
We judge each other, we judge circumstances as good or bad, and now we also have, I think, this other element of the media and social media and mainstream media and alternative media really creating these different channels where people hear their news that are amplifying these perspectives and strengthen these, different perspectives that actually divide us. And I that's very much a concern. I know I just read an article about how, well, I don't really want to necessarily get into politics, but but where there's for there is again in our elections, there are people from different countries posing, as Trump supporters and in the US. And probably as Biden supporters, I have no idea. And really just joining in to create, to map, to widen the divide and to also just, spread untruths, which make it really more difficult for people to come out of their bubbles of belief, and their comfort zones almost of their habitual ways of thinking about different topics and people. So I kind of feel like the only way out is to raise consciousness and create the capacity for people to self-awareness. Where am I judging myself, others, and the world? What are my internal voices or narratives and patterns that keep me either stuck or keep me from expanding my own ability to be? To have impact in the way that I want to in the world.
Yeah, I've heard your frustration about the development in the social media and how they impact also in the politics and in the connection in between the society and I guess the overwhelming feeling and frustration about how what can we do and how can we stop the disconnect. And at the same time, it creates this urgent need to think about how we can and what can we do to let the judgment or the judgmental thinking behind us to reconnect or taking a step out of our bubbles.
And I just think that, I know this is a little bit of a heady discussion, but when we, so one of the things that I'm using to open hearts and minds is a form of sort of storytelling or imaginative thinking, based on the work. Well, really, based on the concept of making decisions based on the seventh generation. It's a Haudenosaunee law or principle that, or rule that's given to leaders that when they deliberate, they need to deliberate on behalf of the seventh generation. And then Joanna Macy, who's, sort of a long-term social collective leader and coach, facilitator. She created something called a conversation with a seventh generation, like a 20-minute process. And then I saw that and experienced that with Phoebe Tikal at the First Inner Development Goals Summit in Stockholm in 2022. And so we've kept my partner in life and sometimes in work, Kevin Stack and I have modified that somewhat and brought that forward. But the idea that we are a bridge. Right, between seven generations back and
Mm-hmm.
seven generations forward, which is about 200 years,
Mm-hmm.
we can touch, we if we think about, our great grandchildren, maybe mostly yet unborn on one side, and reaching out through our children to their children to their children, right? That's three generations on maybe the right, and then our great grandparents on the left. We're a bridge between those two worlds, right in the middle. But if you stretch that out again, seven generations, think about how much can and will be different in the year 2224. And if we were to really contemplate what is the world that we're, how can we be good ancestors for that seventh generation? What's the world that we're creating qualitatively, ecologically, relationally for them? In a way, I think it's creating an open heart for people that will never know, and becoming and really taking personal responsibility and letting that be part of our navigate power, right? For those of your listeners who have done positive intelligence work, right? The sage power of navigate, as we most often use it in our coaching, is looking at our wiser elder self. But what if we were to look at this through the lens of the seventh generation?
What I'm sensing is kind of pain about what you are observing. It's happening in the world or around you, and this and about the lack of responsibility, and on the other side, the huge longing and need for taking responsibility, not just for now, for us, also for 200 years.
And not so much pain, also a lot of hope and optimism, but it's sometimes, frustration, and there's a part of me that judges, that says, oh, why don't they just get it? Why can't they just see what I see, right? And I know that that voice is not helpful, but that is a judge voice. I now know that that's where that frustration comes from. And I also, and so what I love is when I get to work with clients who have an open mind, or people who have that are aware that, that things are not as we maybe want them to be, and we can be an agent of change at some level. And not everybody has. I also long time ago, I thought I picked apart the word responsibility as the ability to respond. So not everybody has the same ability to respond, and that's important to acknowledge. We are where we are. We carry whatever history, burden, trauma we carry, and there's a huge need for this inner development for healing, so that we can think beyond our own. It's right to think 200 years out and try to take, to have empathy, to, in some sense, take a st become stewards of the seventh generation, when it, maybe on Maslow's hierarchy, where we're barely surviving ourselves, maybe not because of physical needs being met, but maybe because of emotional, spiritual, mental, needs not being met or fulfilled. It's a lot to ask. So I think that many change makers may not think about that reality, that those people that they're working to quote unquote change, or to enroll in a cause for change that requires this very long-term thinking, may not be possible, may not be within the current capability people that they're working to bring on board. Does that make sense?
Yes, somehow I can summarize what I understand. The meaning I got from you, actually, when I think into the seventh generation concept, if you think it this way, for me, it's like a star or compass who gives support you to navigate, give you orientation for your direction. And just this mindset creates circumstances in your mind, which creates a different behavior.
Yes.
And one point you described for me is this kind of, we are the bridge. So if we want to create this change, actually we, yeah, maybe we can say it, we bridging is a change, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe we will not see the change we started.
Right, for sure. Yeah.
Because we started the change and the development to do things different by creating awareness, which is, you mentioned, it's important also for you that we, and what I've heard is acknowledging who we are, who they are, and what they are able to be.
Yeah. I think that's why I shifted away from, I spent 28 years in basically technology companies, consulting, you know, Anderson Consulting, IBM, Schneider Electric, and really working with physical solutions, processes, you know, technologies that enable energy efficiency in buildings, or, you know, computer systems and technologies, to the softer side, the human system side of change. Because I see, I saw in my work in the green buildings and smart cities space that the greatest enablers, as well as the greatest barriers for systemic change, transformative change, are the human systems that are involved in that change, the people, and how we, our self-awareness, our relational awareness, and our capacity to collaborate and co-create. And empathy is a big part of that, you know?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
So my observation is, here in Germany, I don't know how it is in the US, that these abilities and skills are not educated or developed in schools.
They're not part of the formal curriculum, usually, I think, and certainly not so much at a college level or university level. I know my local school has a positivity project. I don't think, you know, and they teach values, one value per month, I think, and which is something, you know, that's head knowledge about what we should do. But I think there's so much more that can be done. And I think that's where, why we do the work that we do. And also societally, we have many, I don't know if this is also saying in Germany, but over here we'll say it's not personal, it's just business. Right? Or suck it up, buttercup, you know, and big boys don't cry. And at a very young age.
So beliefs are implemented.
Yeah, they're colloquialisms. You know, they're embedded into our vocabulary, into our ways of, yeah, well, our words matter. And so if these phrases are phrases that are used over and over again, they become part of our conscious belief system. And those particular phrases do not lead to the open sharing of feelings and respect for knowledge of the heart, you know, the feelings and the knowledge of the heart center, or gut intelligence or intuition. We've become very dependent on the thinking brain, the cognitive brain.
Do I got it right that you started to change something or got aware about this issue 28 years ago when you then decided, yeah, at a certain point you said you decided to change your business. You left the technology companies like IBM and so on, and then you started to focus on this green development.
I actually started much sooner than that. So I left corporate, left in terms of being a corporate employee, in 2014 and started my coaching business then, coaching kind of consulting facilitation. But I would say that I started my coach training inside of IBM in 2002, and I became a certified coach in 2006. But I stayed primarily, except for 3 years, in leadership development at IBM from 2003 to 2006. I went back to the line of business side. I worked in industrial sector sales and marketing from 2006 to 2010. And An Inconvenient Truth really touched my heart, that movie with Al Gore. And I began to be connected with the IBM Green Army. So I began to be in what I think now is referred to as an intrapreneur inside of these organizations. So, and I would say I was playing that role as soon as I started my coach training. We were very intrapreneurial. We were playing a bigger game, the group of coaches that went through, which is a group of like 28 of us. And we had a bigger game to touch. I think it was, I don't know, 10,000 people with coaching in the next 12 months. Like, we were determined that coaching, to bring humanity back to the workplace. And that was in my early, that was in the early 2000s at IBM. And then in the mid 2000s, from 2006 to 2010, I was very focused on how do we bring, at that time it was called social responsibility movement, and make it more real inside of IBM in our business units. And we did a lot of work. I launched something called the Green Sigma Coalition, and which was sort of a team of rivals with IBM to try to reduce energy, water, waste, and CO2 emissions in the industrial sector through using an early Internet of Things, right? Using technology and computing, smart computing. And some of that led to the Smarter Planet go-to-market approach that IBM announced in, I think it was late 2009, Sam Palmisano. So, and then I went, because of that Green Sigma Coalition, Schneider Electric was one of the members. I ended up going to work in the green buildings space at Schneider Electric as the global VP of green buildings. It was the beginning of their green building solution movement. How would they bring the different parts of Schneider Electric together to work to bring a solutions approach to the buildings space? Again, technologically focused, using, very similar, metering, monitoring, diagnostics, predictive diagnostics into the building space, really looking at the building as a living being with a nervous system that enabled it to self-regulate in a smart way. So I did step out of all of that. So I have this sort of technological, engineering mind as well, and this people-centric other half of me, I guess, that are, I don't know if they're well balanced or not, but I'm leaning into the human system side because I see a huge need there to convene and enable people to work through different views and opinions and agendas and incentive systems and the things that divide us in a sense, in order to align around large scale transformative.
So, yeah. Actually, when I listen to you, it's about to enable the human beings to reconnect to themselves and to others, to collaborate, co-create, sense and feel what's around us.
It is. We are co-creators, and we some of us sometimes we just don't realize how powerful we can be and how wonderful it feels to be part of a generative, positive, transformation, as opposed to being maybe neutral or engaged in a, and I think that many, yeah. And so there's many scales. It doesn't have to be global. And for many people, they do their work at a community level or at a family level.
Somehow, what I've heard from you has to do something with business and how we are thinking about corporations and what we do. Maybe it's not about judging the business itself. It's just about creating a space to talk about how can we do business different so that it's generative.
Really, that's it. Yeah. So, and this has been coming for so long. For me, this has been clear for so long. Why I stayed in the corporate space for so long was because companies are fairly efficient and, fairly well managed in some ways. And so if we can enable change in a business system, a large business like an IBM, we can impact, that's a great platform for positive change if we can help to enable that change from within. So I really encourage people that are working inside of these large systems to take care of themselves, and to find other liminal cells, other people like them who have a vision for the next generation of that company, or what's possible if that company were to shift their purpose just a little bit. I love the B Corp concept, the triple bottom line concept. And I understand that capitalism has some limitations, which is why I do believe that moving much more towards a triple or quadruple bottom line can help to heal some of that singular focus on growth and profit. But yeah, I'm not a tear it down person. If it implodes on its own, which it may, yeah, I understand that. That's a possibility. But I'd much rather work with, see, companies are just made up of people like you and me. That's all. Yeah.
What I see is, or here is, the when I'm listening to you, somehow the imagination of a corporation or the company as an organism,
A living system.
a living system. I was thinking on ants, you know.
Yeah.
So where that the people don't go into a machine when they go at work, that they go there to feel and sense what makes sense and what for what they want to contribute. This is what's moving you, I guess.
Yes, for sure. And that's how I tried to operate inside of the companies that I worked for as much as I could. It can be hard and tiring for those who are listening that view themselves as change makers inside of these, large systems that are fairly rigid at times, right? And don't feel like living systems all the time. It can be quite tiring.
It feels like a machine dead somehow, you know.
But when you reach out to the people, and it is possible to bring more humanity in and more heart-centered leadership in. I mean, that is what I'm doing right now. You're kind of doing some of this work too, I know. And so, whether it's the inner development goals and bringing that concept in, whether it's positive intelligence and mental fitness and bringing that in, I work with a model called the bigger game and, kind of like the BHAG idea, big, hairy, what's a big, hairy, audacious goal that we could do together that we can't do separately? If we really worked, there's many ways to shift the collective thinking inside of these systems.
It sounds to me like to inspire the people to feel themselves, get aware about themselves and how they collaborate and behave in the corporation and to inspire them to, hey, would you like to try it different and see how it feels for you and what kind of impact it has in your for you and the organization. And maybe this kind of experience is a transformational shift so that the organization itself comes up with a different output.
Yeah, for sure. I'm working with a construction business unit inside of an engineering company right now, and we've done the Enneagram work one-on-one with about 32 people, and we've done positive intelligence with, at this point, close to the same number. Not the same exact people. Some of them yes, some of them no. And it's caused already since maybe 9 months, a shift in their culture, an openness, more creativity, and yeah, and how can they bring this into their projects? This different way of being with each other and interacting as humans and handling conflict and all those things, right? The five stage powers, for example.
And what is flourishing for you when you go into such a journey with this employees in a corporation, or when you experience this kind of, being with human people?
Well, I think what opens up is so much hope and also just unblocks human potential and joy. I just see people that are much happier, who have dropped some old baggage that they carried around for their whole lives sometimes. Their home relationships are better. Their relationships at work are better. Their ability to handle, the everyday emergencies. They don't see them so much as emergencies anymore, much less stress. And that frees them up to create, to innovate, to imagine new ways of doing their existing business. I was talking about, this to a leader in that, the leader of that organization. What if we created, a new way of launching a project team, and that's not just your people, but the subcontractors and the partners, even the client. How will we interact with each other throughout this project? What are our principles for communication and conflict and change when it happens? And so he was excited about that idea. Not just putting it in a manual that these are our standards for how we communicate, but also like building it into the project life cycle itself and the processes, the communication processes. Yeah, so things get, yeah, it opens up the door for co-creation. And that's fun.
For
Yeah,
you and for
I
them.
think it's fun for them too. See you doing a lot of thinking. What's opening for you?
I was thinking about how what is my resonance and what could be my next question, or is it time to wrap up or so?
Yeah.
This was what I was thinking about, and I was actually sending to the meaning. So this is the work you do, and this is what gives you meaning.
It is.
At the same time, I've heard it's quite hard also to creating this kind of safe space that people open up and motivated to try this new things and behavior and interaction, and to be open to explore the new kind of experience and let this judgment and destructive thinking behind them.
Yeah, I mean, I think that what's hard is I would just like to be in the work, doing the work with teams that are ready. And so maybe I make this up that it's hard, but the invitation to the sales process, if you will, the marketing of these services feels very tactical. And so I'm working, on my own mindset. What is it, what's a good way to bring people in? It really has to be an invitation that feels that resonates with the next potential client. And also I'm trying, different ways of expanding that. I mean, references are great, of course, when one business unit just or one team just kind of says, oh, you need to work with Melissa. And that does happen. Which is lovely.
I have a resonance when I'm listening to you. Maybe it has to do with leadership, and when you're thinking about your own mindset, it resonated with me, and I would think, yeah, damn it. It's not about questioning yourself what I'm doing and for what reason I'm doing. When I believe in myself and I have my purpose, take all the block away and then just do it. And by this energy, I guess usually we inspire the people, and then this kind of followership creates when you believe in yourself. And this is what came up in me when I was listening to you.
Well, thank you. That's so beautiful because we become hopefully attractors of the people that are ready for this work. in a way.
And I mean, I know we do similar things, and you were talking about the new stuff and inner development goals and doing things different. And I mean, the current situation in the corporation creates safety for the people. Clear structure, clear behavior, safety in income. They know what they have to do or can do, and then they know they get what they need. Money, for example, maybe less appreciation or something. And I mean, what's works most for me is less talking about it and let's start walking. And then by this doing, inspiring the people and encourage them. This is my resonance. I just was an impulse to share it with you.
Yeah, thank you. So that's how you oftentimes, is that one of your ways of walking in the door or of engaging with clients or potential new clients?
It's relative because I know when I do this, it's very exciting for me, and there's a big amount of energy and inspiration, and somehow flow can emerge. And the truth also is, what's more often is the questioning, what's the, and the hesitating, because I sense it's also, if you want to change something, or do you have created a belief or experience or an idea how it could be different? And many people are walking it still another direction. As a social being, it's challenging anyway to walk it another way and inspire people to, hey, let's see what's here and how it could be different to what we actually do and what we know what the consequences are.
You know, it's interesting when we do this work inside of companies, inside of organizations, and you talked about the company provides a certain amount of safety to people that work and get a salary and whatever, right? Even though there might be some amount of pain that goes with it, some lack of appreciation, or even some level of toxicity. Two things came to mind. One is that it is a courageous act to embark on this kind of work to enable change in the culture itself. And then to take that next step further, if you're somebody that sits inside of a company and you care a lot about sustainable development goals or something that, you know, ESG or justice, equity, and inclusion, or, you know, some of these large societal challenges, use the safety that you've got. Use, you know, the fact that you have the salary and the position, you know, the position, and from that place of safety, become more courageous to find your voice inside of that system and to become an internal agent of change. I really wish that for people, because there is a certain privilege in having a salary. So why not use that for good? You know, and yeah, tap into that, your own navigation system, your inner compass.
And
Maybe we
in
should leave. I don't know if we should end with that, but you know, I know
yeah, we can
end at some point, but
I just wanted to share one a little story because you mentioned it. If you have a safe place for you in the corporation, use it for this kind of change. You know, some of my customers saying being a submarine, you know.
yes.
You understand,
I do. That's why it was called the Green Army at IBM, but it was this underground network of sorts, right? The funny thing was is that the director, you know, the strategy team knew about the Green Army and helped to keep it going. And in some cases at IBM, we were actually asked to do a huge project, volunteer project. So, underground submarine, ask forgiveness, not permission. But many cultures really do encourage this sort of skunk works, right? Unofficial innovation. And other companies actually have innovation catalyst kinds of roles. And yeah. But bloom where you're planted if you can, if you've got a place where you're
Yeah.
You have the salary.
Yeah. And I have last thing I would like to share. What I'm thinking sometimes is actually what I'm emerging is the imagination of how a corporation or company could look like if we wouldn't follow the paradigm of making money, and that money is the key thing we need to sustain and survive or and keep the company running. And what would happen if we think we need this kind of connection, collaboration, creating, taking responsibility, finding solution for big, huge problems. And the technology could be the strategy, but the intention, you know, is different.
Yeah.
And that we working not because of the money, we're working because of the inner purpose and the development of human being, environmental, everything. And money is just an outcome of it, you know.
Right. It's part of the it is, yeah, because you're creating a creating value. And so it's an exchange of value. You get so you're getting something in return for creating that value, but it's not the object, the primary objective.
Yeah. And what I'm thinking in this too is, you know, you can make a lot of money and you work very hard, and people say, wow, you are so a hard worker, but you pay a price anyway, like health. And then you take all the money you got to recover.
Yeah.
And imagine you go into a business where you get charged with energy and then you need also less money because you don't need the money to recover, to buy recovery or something.
Yeah, it's true. I that resonates with me too. And I probably would be making five times as much money, or two times as, or three times, I don't know, if I'd stayed in corporate. Yeah, 10 years ago, right? It's okay.
Good. So, how do you feel so far?
I feel good. Thank you. I feel inspired, heard, seen, heard, understood, valued, and appreciated. So thank you, Sebastian.
Lots of flowers. Yeah. Is there something you would like to share finally, or to summarize? How do you go?
I think that I don't know your listeners, but I just encourage them to realize that empathy is a superpower, it's not a weakness. And eventually we'll all know that. So keep listening to Sebastian's podcast, and maybe if you're in Germany, reach out to him to see if he can help you find ways to grow this human systems leadership awareness inside of your organization, or just one-on-one. And if you are in the US, please reach out to me. I would love to have a conversation, especially if you're a change maker and you're trying to figure out how to make this work. Right? I mean, or if you're a recent corporate dropout, I understand you as well. And all of you difference makers out there, keep going.
So, thank you very much, Melissa, for your openness, your trust, and your vulnerability.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Sebastian. And thanks for inviting me.
Welcome. That was episode 71, Bringing Humanity into Corporations. If you like the podcast, follow and rate it and share it with your friends on social media. And if you would like to be heard with something or give me a feedback, then write to me at podcast@mpartyschenker.de. On that note, see you in 2 weeks.